Chapter 24. Not Men. Vedaya wept. She wanted to scream, but she needed to see this, to remember it, so that if she lived, then others would know what had happened. Pilliam's story would live on. He staggered, spitting blood as he wrenched arrows from his body or broke the shafts in half. He fell to one knee, but through a supreme effort righted himself again to face his murderer. The henchman had descended the ramparts and emerged from an archway that led out into the muddy square.
"You're kind," he said,
and Vedaya heard the fear and the shame in his voice above the rain, and she wondered what had happened to him out in the wilds.
"You're kind, not men. I have seen your true faces. You are monsters."
A broad-bladed sword slid out of the scabbard on his back. It was a savage weapon, and he had to hold it in two hands.
"They saved your city," cried Vedaya,
unable to keep her peace any longer.
"You're right,"
she said, hoping her words might stir some mote of gratitude for what the Ultramarines had done.
"They are not men. They are more than that. More than you. They saved you."
The Baron gave her a curt glance.
"Shut her up."
Vedaya felt rough hands grab her wrists and dropped her cane. She struggled at first, but knew it was pointless. She looked out onto the ramparts for Scarfell or any of his men, feeling sure he would at least see sense. But he was not there. Only the Baron's cronies stood in the audience, and a handful of shocked onlookers drawn to the spectacle, but too afraid to say anything. In the crowd, a woman was weeping. The henchman paused at the sound, his will seeming to falter. The Baron made sure it did not.
"Hawkbird, do your duty."
He looked back at his liege lord, just once, then nodded.
"You die now," he told Pilliam,
and charged at him. The first cut carved a savage line down the Ultramarine's left flank, Hawkbird stepping away from his opponent's desperate lunge. A second blow slashed open Pilliam's leg and put him down on one knee again. He could barely hold himself upright. His eyes found Vedaya's.
"Courage and honour,"
he whispered, the words all too plain on his ashen lips, a moment before Hawkbird ran him through. Fighting had broken out across the far rampart, but it seemed remote as everyone's attention was fixated on the square. Hawkbird pushed the sword as deep as it would go, drawing a gasp from Pilliam as the blade exited through his back. He murmured something, grinning savagely, but his face changed abruptly when the broken arrowhead tore out his throat. Dumbfounded, he let go of his sword, backing off uncertainly before falling onto his backside in the mud and then collapsing, his hands still patting ineffectually at his throat until they were still. Pilliam dropped the arrowhead in the dirt and raised up his chin to meet his end. Stunned silence ringed the square until the Baron, his face a portrait of abject shock, screamed at his archers.
"Finish it!"
"Stop this," declared Scarfell, a cohort of warriors in tow.
Upon seeing the castellan, the archers hesitated.
"Don't listen to him. I am your Baron. Do it!"
"No,"
Scarfell said softly.
"You won't."
He had brought his own archers. He had Rhaedar and Geraint too. Both were armed.
"It's over, Athelnar."
The Baron looked to his men, a mere handful still loyal in the face of the sudden coup. Scarfell had men coming up both of the flanking ramparts. More people were gathering at the edges of the square and had started to jeer and shout at their liege lord, looking left and right, then to the grey-faced corpse of his protector, slowly drowning in the mud. Athelnar ran. His warriors locked their shields to cover his escape, but relented as soon as they realized how badly outnumbered they had become.
A few of the footmen made to follow, but Scarfell called them back.
He won't get far. There's nowhere for him to go.
Fedea shrugged off her aggressor, who looked shocked at her sudden strength as she pushed him back. She then retrieved her fallen cane and rushed down the steps, through the archway and into the square. She hurried to Pilium, skirts trailing in the mud, and caught up to him just as he fell onto his side. He was too heavy to hold up, so she wiped the blood and dirt from his face instead. He lived, barely, but would not last long. She looked back at the crowd, at Rita and Geraint, at Scarfell, who had taken charge of the ramparts and the army.
"Where is he?"
she said. Scarfell gave her a confused look.
"The vizier, where is he?"
There was no time to answer. A roar approached on the wind, the throaty burn of engines and the dull throb of turbofans. They all heard it and looked skywards. Vedea knew what it was. The Ultramarines had returned. They had betrayed him. He should have known. Their petty minds, their petty, insignificant lives. Easily bent to whichever wind currently blows strongest. Athelnar cursed himself for not seeing the Castellan's ambition.
"Die, and protecting us,"
he said aloud, hurrying through the secret undercroft of the city, headed for his keep and the treasure vaults. There were men who were still loyal, those he paid in coin. He would need to be quick, though. Find a wagon, good horses. He would need another protector, too, for even the thought of sullying his ceremonial sword in combat sent a sick feeling rushing through his gut. He paused in the darkness. The flaming brand, held by one of the guards who had accompanied him from the square, flickering patiently just ahead.
"Sire,"
the second guard began, this one stationed behind him. Athelnar waved off the guard's concern, annoyed at his own weakness. It was all crumbling. At least it was for now.
"I will find a way back," said Athelnar,
hurrying through the catacombs now. No one had seen fit to follow. Few even knew of the tunnels under the city. He had more men waiting at the keep, his own warriors, the ones he kept around him and with full purses to ensure they stayed that way. A small army he had already planted out. He would flee, taking the men with him. The Knights of Macragge had been exposed as monsters. They would doubtless take what they wanted and then leave. All Athelnar needed to do was wait for that to happen and then return. Scarfell would have to die, of course, but the people would fall in line. He was sure of that.
"Yes, I can have it all back," he muttered, a smile easing its way across his face
as they emerged into a larger chamber and were confronted by a mob of bone swine.
"Defend your baron,"
he said, quavering at the sight of the creatures stirring in the darkness. They blinked at the light, their eyes hungry, and sniffed at dank air, suddenly pickled by sweat and fear. The two guards came forwards, uncertainly to protect their liege lord, swords drawn and shields up. Bellowing, the bone swine lumbered at the men. Athelnar looked away, too afraid to see death coming for him. He thought about going back, running down the corridor, but that path was closed to him now. Perhaps he could slip past, if his guards kept the bone swine occupied for long enough. He had been about to push one of the guards into the onrushing beasts, when an intensely bright flash of light briefly filled the corridor, and he clenched his eyes shut. When he opened them again, the steaming husks of bone swine flesh littered the ground, blasted apart, all dead.
"Gods," breathed Athelnar,
relieved and afraid at the same time. Then he saw who was standing before them in the catacombs, a faintly glowing staff in his right hand. His expression went from fear and wonder to confusion and annoyance.
"You,"
he said, shoving the guards aside now the danger had passed.
"You wretched coward! Where have you been? It's a rebellion!"
Nehepkow met the baron's angry gaze.
"It is,"
said the vizier, and raised his staff as the light around it began to build anew.
"But that is no longer your concern."
The guards died,
burned to ash in what seemed like a heartbeat. Time slowed and felt heavy for the Baron, like someone had stitched metal coins into his robes. He tried to draw his sword, an unfamiliar sensation, but it was as if it weighed the same as an anvil.
What?
Even his words were sluggish, stretched like soft leather, barely discernible. The vizier held a device in his hands, an amulet that looked very much like a compass.
I am not the vizier, not yours at least, said Nehepkau.
The Baron's face contorted slowly with abject terror as he forced out the word.
Sorcerer!
Chronomancer, Nehepkau corrected. See?
He gestured to the Baron's fingers as they wizened, the skin thinning and stretching and aging impossibly in moments.
I am a shaper of time. Let me show you whom I serve.
Apparitions bled into the Baron's mind, of skeletal legions rendered in metal, of crescent-shaped skyships and arachnoid monstrosities, of a one-eyed vizier, deathless, indomitable, the curse of living metal and an ancient empire that meant to reconquer the stars. It was impossible, but as his mind and body collapsed, wrenched across time itself, the Baron knew it was all true. He tried to scream as that cyclopean eye stared back at him, but as he opened his mouth, all that emerged was dust.